Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org.
We will be one people under one God. One people under one God. Under one God, saluting one American flag. One American flag.
But as Christians, at least, we do have to kind of sit back and be like, okay, at what point do we decide we're not part of the American culture anymore? We're not a subculture of the American thinking anymore.
You can't make the argument that sexual diversity is good because God said of everything that he made in Genesis 1 that it was good.
This is Alex in Northwest Indiana, and I am an Uber listener.
What do you do? You are a biblical archaeologist. You have discovered a great find. It is a scroll of the Old Testament. You have found it in its place in a burnt-out synagogue. It is exceedingly ancient, on the order of more than 2,000 years old. That alone makes your career as a biblical archaeologist. You've got one problem. The scroll is burnt almost to a cinder, and it's rolled up as well. And if you even attempted to unroll it to read it, you would destroy it and be unable to read it. What do you do? Well, if you're that kind of biblical archaeologist, you wait. You wait until the technology catches up and you find a way to read that scroll without unrolling it, without doing it any harm whatsoever. And that's exactly what they've done. And what they found in this little scroll discovered in the remains of a Jewish synagogue is the beginning of the book of Leviticus. Does it match up with the other copies of Leviticus that we have from later on? Well, that's one of the questions we're going to be answering here. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 22nd of September. Dr. Nathan Jastrom will join us to talk about an ancient scroll that verifies the Hebrew text of Leviticus. A little bit later, part two of our series on the Old Testament and liberal Lutheranism, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will be our guest. Dr. Nathan Jastrom is a regular guest. He's chairman of the Department of Theology and Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He was a member of an international team of scholars granted access to work on the Dead Sea Scrolls and to publish, for the first time, the most extensive scroll of the Book of Numbers. He joins us to talk about an ancient scroll verifying the Hebrew text of Leviticus. Dr. Jastrom, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
What does our ability to read this tiny scroll now, what does it tell us or teach us about the Old Testament book of Leviticus that we have today?
Well, the simplest answer is that it teaches that our text has been very stable for a very long period of time. This is the oldest scroll that has ever been discovered in its location in the Ark inside a synagogue. It probably was burnt down around 600 AD or so, but the scroll itself could be as early as the first century, near the end of the time period of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So the text of the scroll is identical to the Masoretic text that we've known all along. And the fact that it's found in the Ark, in a synagogue, at this ancient site in Israel, right by the Dead Sea, shows how stable that text has been over actually thousands of years.
Just explain that to us, because I think most people assume that some of these manuscripts would go back to the time of their writings, back to the 1000, 2000 BC. But explain to us how the manuscripts that we have for the Hebrew Old Testament, we do not have extant manuscripts going back that far, but into ancient times.
That's right. The original manuscripts would have been written as early as 1400 BC or so. But those manuscripts were used extensively as the Israelites would wander through the wilderness, as they would finally come into the Promised Land, use them in their temple. Those manuscripts would end up wearing out, just like any manuscript today will wear out if it's used often enough. So the standard age for manuscripts to last was between 200 and 300 years, which is a long, long time, but it's much shorter than the time that we'd need to have the original manuscripts today. So what happened was that every time a new king would arise, at least, they would make new copies of the ancient scrolls so that they'd always have fresh scrolls in case the old ones got damaged in some way or in case they got deteriorated. So the scrolls that we got from the Dead Sea are the most ancient copies of the biblical manuscript that are still alive, preserved for thousands of years in that very arid, dry atmosphere of the Dead Sea region.
And one more question on that. When we talk about copies, most people will erroneously assume that copying, 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 as you just mentioned, introduces so many errors that it's the game of telephone where the original no longer bear any resemblance to the original. You're saying exactly the opposite is shown by this
exactly.
reading.
Yeah, we don't have to speculate. It's not a matter of faith. We can actually compare copies that were made, say, in 200 BC with copies that were made after 1000 AD, and we can see that the copying that was done throughout those 1,200 years left virtually no change in the text of the Bible that we have today.
So this must be of particular interest to you because your work with the ancient manuscripts of the Dead Sea Scrolls focused on the book of Numbers, and here we are with its most proximate Pentateuchal writing, Leviticus, right there. What is in this scroll that's been now newly read?
Well, all we have of this scroll is the first couple of columns. It's a fairly large scroll in terms of the types of scrolls that we've discovered, but it doesn't contain nearly the entire book of Leviticus. We just know that the part that has remained are the first couple of chapters of Leviticus. And even there, approximately half of those first couple of chapters has decayed away and simply is not available. But what's still there is about half of the letters from the first couple of chapters of Leviticus. And that's where God is telling Moses about the sacrifices that he required under Old Testament law. What type of things you needed to do for a sacrifice of a cow or a bull or a calf, and what sacrifices you'd need to do with lambs or goats. And then also grain offerings are included in there. So that type of ceremonial law was the focus of Leviticus, and it pops up already in the first couple of chapters there.
Why did it take until now to be able to read this scroll that we're talking about?
Oh, if you just look at the picture of the charred, burnt scroll, you can see that it was totally illegible. I've seen fragments like that myself when I was working with scroll fragments, and you think, oh, there's no hope. Not even infrared photography could unwrap the secrets when the scroll is still all rolled up, but it's just a roll of charcoal at this point. So what they had to do, if they tried to unroll it, everything would crush away into dust, so that would just destroy it completely. So what they did was they used a computerized tomography machine, and they took slices of pictures like people take of their brains or of parts of their body when they're getting sick. And then they reconstructed these slices so that they could figure out which areas were which layer of the scroll as it was rolled out. So they got a sort of map of the internal structure of the scroll, and then they could use the X-ray intensity to pick out the areas where ink had been on those surfaces. And once you pick up areas of intensity and then place it on the map of the structure of the scroll, then suddenly the letters popped out, and they were just ecstatic. It really is a remarkable achievement.
And this scroll, you say, found in place, which is just as rare as it can possibly be in ancient archaeology, especially with text, found in place in an ancient synagogue, what would this scroll have been used for? How would it have been used?
The ancient Jews would read from the Pentateuch every service that they would have. they had a whole system of readings, what we would call today pericopes that they would read. And depending on which pericope that they would read, they would go through the entire first five books of the Bible, either every year or every 3 years. So this would have been one of those ancient Torah scrolls that even today you have people in synagogues reading through. And this would have served that function of providing the readings for those pericopes, service by service.
Now, this isn't something that was archived in the library. This is something that was given the location where it was found in weekly use.
That's right. Yeah, and those Dead Sea Scrolls that often are talked about as coming from the Library of Qumran, they were actually found in kind of hiding places, caves that were inaccessible, and they were kind of thrown in there rather rapidly when the Jews were fearful that the Romans would come and destroy their settlement and their scrolls. So they were found kind of in a storage area and hiding place, but the scroll that was just read from En Gedi, which is a place where King David visited, right by the Dead Sea area, that the scroll there was found in the synagogue. They weren't hiding it from their enemies, but apparently their enemies, whether they were the Bedouin raiders at that time or maybe the Byzantine government at that time, came through and burned down the synagogue before the inhabitants had a chance to hide anything away.
Now, the ability to read this ancient scroll, does it give you hope for the kind of lost causes in the Dead Sea Scroll libraries, things that have to this point been inaccessible in the same way?
It certainly does. This same technology is being used to look inside what are called phylacteries. Phylacteries are leather cases that contain biblical excerpts that Jews would wear around their forehead or on their forearm. And some of those phylacteries were so brittle, some of the cases were so brittle, that there wasn't even an attempt to open them because, again, they just crush away into dust. But now with this technology, they should be able to look inside closed phylactery cases and tease out the very small writing that's within those cases.
Does it also give hope for future archaeological finds? Because I'm thinking here about the Dead Sea Scrolls found in jars, found in piles, because they'd been hastily hidden away and not, without the time to properly preserve them. Any future archaeological find where we might not even have to open the scroll and damage it in order to examine it?
Yes, I think it does provide that hope. And I'm so thankful that the curators of the Israeli Antiquities Authority decided just to hang on to these worthless charred chunks of scrolls, even when there was no way to look inside, even though it looked like there was no value to the scrolls themselves, because they had no technology when they were discovered to actually read them. But because of their foresight in preserving these scrolls, now we can actually read those scrolls again. And there are other scrolls that still remain undecipherable because they're so blackened, they're so deteriorated. So using this type of technology on even those scrolls, I think, should provide some improved readings in the future.
We're talking about documents and materials here that are millennia old. Do you ever marvel at the fact that they survived at all?
I certainly do. When I first worked with the Scroll of Numbers, and I held in my hands that ancient document, it sent shivers down my spine that something that would have been 30 to 50 years old when Jesus was born was in my hands. It connects you to ancient history and biblical history in a way that simply is impossible without these physical artifacts. That's when it really becomes evident that our faith is based not on some philosophy, some good ideas that somebody had, but it's based on real people living in real places, leaving behind real remnants like scrolls or like other artifacts, pottery and other buildings and things like that that come from that period.
Somebody says, well, this is all of great interest to scholars, like yourself who are willing to spend the hours and upon hours of sifting through fragments and fitting them into place and then reconstructing the documents. But for the average person, what good does it do the average person, these albeit amazing discoveries of these ancient biblical texts? How would you answer that?
Well, it all depends on whether you want to believe in something that's true or whether it doesn't really matter so much, as long as you have a comfortable faith that either your parents taught you or maybe that's been traditional in your area. If you're satisfied with just fitting into the culture, whether it's true or not, if you've grown up in that Christian culture, then it doesn't really matter whether we find hard evidence that certain things that are claimed in that religion are true or false. But if it does make a difference, whether you're basing your faith on historical reality or whether it's just something that's been made up, then this type of discovery is extremely important. It's not as if our faith depends on it, but it's the case where if the evidence continued to disprove things that we held out as being true, we'd have to sit back as thinking individuals and say, well, then I guess it's not a good idea for me to keep believing in that. So it's nice to have the confirmation coming in from artifacts like this that say, no, these elements really are historically verifiable.
One other question, Dr. Jastrom. Someone might wonder, why would these ancient people, why would they so value these things that they would preserve them, that when marauders are coming or they're under attack, they would hide them rather than things that the world would consider far more valuable than just writings on parchment?
I think the shortest answer is that they believed these were the words of God. And if you believe that these are the words of God, then they're more valuable than anything else that you deal with on a daily basis. So I think part of our attitude in many cases about, well, it doesn't really matter what God said, it doesn't really matter what's in the Bible, it matters more what I feel comfortable with. If that's your type of attitude, well, then you're not going to value these sacred scriptures as much as people used to. But if you think these are the very words of God himself, then they're more important than anything else in the world.
Dr. Nathan Jastrom is chairman of the Department of Theology and Philosophy at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He was a member of the international team of scholars granted access to work on the Dead Sea Scrolls and published for the first time the most extensive scroll of the Book of Numbers. Dr. Jastrom, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's been a pleasure.
When we come back, we're going to talk about liberal Lutheranism and the Old Testament again with Pastor Brian Ketchelmore, part two of our series with him. We'll be talking a little bit about prostitutes in the Old Testament.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. The Issues Etc. 300.
Expert guests. Expansive topics. Extolling Christ. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and child care, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at emmanuelhamilton.com.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.